Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Eugene Levy's Eyebrows, the only depository that could possibly hold all that cash from the roles he just can't turn down. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. I am Alex. With me, as per usual, is James.
Hey, Alex.
Oh, hey, James. Funny meeting you here.
No, it's per usual. You just said that.
Well, I mean, I normally say as always, but last week you weren't on the podcast. You were off beating Arkham City. You were on assignment. So welcome back.
And that wasn't the first time. But anyway, Let's get right into it with a fun story about Paul Bernardo.
Okay. Not a sentence you hear very often, but...
No, it's not a fun story, but you remember the Paul Bernardo story?
Absolutely, I do.
And, yeah, Canadian murderer, torture, crazy guy.
Yeah.
Well, when the police came in and arrested him, they found American Psycho on his bedstand.
Okay.
Did you know that?
Nope, I didn't.
Yeah, it's true, and they actually banned American Psycho in Canada for a little while.
I knew about that, I didn't know it was... Like, I mean, we were so young when that happened,
yeah.
So...
Yeah,
I was probably in like grade three or something. So,
and your parents didn't talk to you about this kind of thing when you were in grade three?
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprisingly more up on the news when I was a kid than now. But, you know, I just don't remember. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, well, I mean, Canada's not big on, you know, censoring stuff like that. But
yeah,
they did ban it for a little while. Mm-hmm. And it kind of happens a couple times in modern history where something gets attached to a pretty heinous crime and mm-hmm. it kind of gets, you know, indicted along with the criminal.
Like Catcher in the Rye with every other murder.
That. That's definitely a good one. Columbine got kind of Marilyn Manson and some other music in trouble. And two things we've talked about, actually. People got murdered in relation to Scream and Mortal Kombat. And mm-hmm. it never was quite the same deal as American Psycho. It didn't get banned or anything. But
I think The Matrix got some of the flack for Columbine as well.
Yeah, because they had trench coats.
Yeah, basically.
And they shot people. Yeah. But today's movie, the one that we're talking about today, is going to be another one of those movies that kind of came up in a murder trial.
Mm-hmm.
This one is not exactly a tenuous connection. The killer, John Hinckley, who tried to kill Ronald Reagan. Specifically stated he did it because of what he saw in Taxi Driver and he wanted to impress Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
And in Taxi Driver, what we're talking about today, Travis Bickle, Robert De Niro's character, tries to kill a presidential candidate. And, you know, that's kind of one of the big plot points in the movie. And John Hinckley saw this and kind of ran with the idea, to say the least.
Yeah.
What's interesting is it's kind of life imitating art imitating life, because Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver, mm-hmm. actually based Travis Bickle's character on someone who tried to assassinate a presidential candidate in 1972.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his name was Arthur Bremer, and you can see all the similarities with Travis Bickle. He's kind of a loner, has some social problems, and eventually just bought a gun, tried to kill candidate George Wallace in 1972. Ended up shooting him, paralyzing him, hitting three other people completely accidentally with bullets. But there's a lot of similarities there, as I said. He tried to kill Nixon earlier, but kind of got close and got scared off by Secret Service and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that he based this on somebody and then someone based their life actions on this character.
Yeah.
I came across another inspiration for Taxi Driver 2. Did you hear about the movie Pickpocket?
No.
Yeah, 1959 French movie. It's well regarded, but it's not hugely popular. But Paul Schrader, again, the writer of Taxi Driver, kind of cites this as an influence of it. And a lot of the other stuff he's written, he kind of traces back to this. When Pickpocket got its Criterion edition, they got Paul Schrader involved just because he was such a huge admirer of the movie.
Okay.
And one other funny inspiration for... Well, maybe not funny. Those last ones weren't funny. This one's funnier,
yeah,
I promise.
This hasn't been a lol-fill podcast so far.
Oliver Stone says he was an influence for Travis Bickle because he knew Martin Scorsese before this movie was made. He was a Vietnam vet as well. He used to drive cabs, and he always wore his kind of green army coat everywhere when Scorsese taught him at NYU.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so there's a couple... influences for this film.
Yeah.
But anyway, kind of get to the movie directly. 1976.
Sure.
Cool, let's go with that. As we said, directed by Scorsese, written by Paul Schrader, starring Bobby D.
Yep.
Robert De Niro, Cybill Shepherd.
Yep.
Who we're big fans of here.
Yes. Moonlighting is the MacGuffin's favorite television show.
Peter Boyle.
Yep. Albert Brooks has a small role.
True. Martin Scorsese has a small role.
Yeah, that's true. Martin Scorsese has two roles in this movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Which I'm a big fan of.
That was an accident, though. He wasn't supposed to play the guy in the cab.
Yeah, no, I heard that. Yeah. It was kind of Scorsese's not big breakthrough. Mean Streets would be the big one, but this kind of elevated his cachet a lot. Right?
Like, yeah, it's sort of like Rushmore was a thing people saw. The Royal Tenenbaums was the thing a lot of people saw for Wes Anderson.
Right.
And it's sort of a Mean Streets, Taxi Driver sort of relationship like that. Although there, I think, wasn't Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore between Mean Streets and Taxi Driver?
Perhaps.
I cannot say for sure. there will be a correction on the website if I'm wrong about that, but... Yeah. Yeah, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it was received well. Got the Palme d'Or at Cannes that year, which is kind of their best picture thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was very well received. And yeah, as you said, it kind of really put his name. His name was already on the map, but this really just kind of elevated his status within Hollywood.
Yeah.
Scorsese's, that is. As far as the plot of the movie, I mean, not that much happens. It's more of a, it's kind of a psychological movie, so a lot of the stuff is character, but some stuff happens. It's your classic boy meets girl, takes her to a porn theater kind of love story, you know?
You know those ones.
Been through this 1,000 times. No, it's Travis Bickle is a Vietnam vet. He's returned back to New York. I guess he didn't. He wasn't born in New York, though. He's from the Midwest, I think they say.
Yeah, I don't think he is born in New York. I can't remember specifically. But.
Yeah, you don't get much of an origin, but it doesn't seem... At least he seems to hate New York a lot, so maybe he is from there and has just hated his whole life, or, you know, moved there and really can't put up with what he's seeing. Gets a job as a taxi driver. He wants to work long hours. He doesn't really know what to do with himself or with his time.
Yeah.
Works the graveyard shift, willing to drive all over New York, he says. So he gets into some pretty sketchy areas with some sketchy people. Meets Cybill Shepherd.
Yep.
What's her name? Betsy?
Yes.
Meets Betsy. She's volunteering at a candidate's Palpatine. No, Palpatine.
No.
Palpatine.
Isn't it? Yeah,
yeah, it's Palpatine. Palpatine.
I was actually thinking of it. Like, every time I watch Taxi Driver, I mean, I'm just like, that's so close to Palpatine.
So she's volunteering to get him elected as president. You know, Travis kind of notices her through the window. I feel like every time I say Travis, I'm going to think of our comic books correspondent, who's significantly less insane than Travis Bickle.
I'm sure he's picturing himself constantly every time he hears.
With the mohawk.
He's very,
good look for Travis.
He's a very self-obsessed person.
Yeah, so, I mean, he kind of just drops the ball with this girl, takes her on a date, but brings her to a porn theater.
Their first date goes well.
Yeah, their first date goes well. She thinks he's a little bit odd, but is intrigued by him.
Yeah.
And agrees to see him again. Their first big date, takes her to the porn theater. She's not a big fan of that. She kind of just cuts him out of her life at that point. Flowers and calls, but...
I mean, that's a super awkward thing to do, but... and I was reading something with Scorsese where that was sort of around the time of, like, Deep Throat being a thing, like, when people were actually going to see porn movies, and that was, like, a thing that people were trying to do, and he's telling a story of him and Brian De Palma seeing Deep Throat together, and they're just, like... They just remember the Scorsese says something like, we're just like, this isn't right. There are couples here. I feel like we should be old guys in trench coats. You know, like, there's just something off about this. So, yeah, it didn't really take off, I guess, other than Deep Throat.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't seem to take off with Betsy in this movie either.
No.
So, yeah, she kind of cuts him out, and he goes a bit more crazy progressively.
Yeah.
Buys some guns.
Yeah, it's a really, like, awkward, uncomfortable movie. I always have trouble watching it. I've seen it probably 5-6 times.
And, yeah.
Like, I can't deal with the scene when they're in the porn theater together. Like, yesterday, when I was watching it, or whenever I was watching it for research, I just left the room and made coffee. Like, I just can't. I needed to get through it. I needed to know it played, but I couldn't watch it again. Like,
yeah.
I've seen it too many times to watch that scene again. And the idea is it just sort of, like... I don't know. The movie tries to put you in Travis's world a lot. Like, you can see there's some point of view shots. Like, there's shots of him walking through the street where it's just a very handheld style, which you didn't see a lot in the 70s. There's shots out the front window of his cab, of course.
Yeah.
And then another great shot that's towards the beginning after he does that sort of quasi-interview for the taxi driver position where he walks out, he looks at the depot, and then the camera turns like all the way and pans across the whole depot. Like, we leave Travis and pans across the whole depot, and then it comes back to Travis, who's walked down a little bit and is basically like checking out the depot. And then he walks out and, you know, he slaps the cab as he walks out. But it's just sort of like giving us his world. But the idea is, and this is really my favorite shot in this movie, is when he has that last phone conversation with Betsy, and he's on the payphone, and then there's this long corridor to the right, and the camera leaves him long before the conversation's over. It's like, we just can't even deal with this. Like, I'm trying to put you in this world, but I just have to get it, you know?
Yeah, the camera's on him, and then it kind of just goes down the hallway and
just
the walls.
Holds it there.
Yeah, there's nothing relevant. There's nothing happening there.
He ends up walking out that corridor, you know, and then, but... yeah, it's just, I don't know. I love that show.
Yeah, no. And I've heard Scorsese talk about it. It's just supposed to be so uncomfortable that you can't even watch this part of the conversation because it's so painful. Like, she's not into it. He's so desperate. And yeah,
I just wish they had done that in the porn theater scene. I could handle the phone conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. After that, he kind of watches her a little bit through the window and kind of approaches her one more time and gets kicked out of the volunteers
and does some really funny, like, karate poses in front of Albert Brooks.
True.
I love.
Yeah. And then he buys some guns.
Yes.
Easy Andy.
Yeah.
Several guns.
Well, I think we got to talk about the Martin Scorsese scene.
Oh, yeah. That is before that.
Yeah. So there's this a guy gets in the back of Travis Bickle's cab. And
it's not just any guy.
Played by Martin Scorsese, you know, businessman in a suit with Scorsese's 70s beard. And he's talking about his... That's another point of view shot comes in the scene. He's talking about how his wife is cheating on him with another man, and he's, like, checking the spot out. And then he's like, can you see that window up in the top right? And we sort of follow... The camera goes up the building and then to the side as Travis is sort of finding this window. That's the point of view shot, and I enjoy that shot as well. But anyways, and yeah, Scorsese's character is just talking about, yeah, I'm going to kill them. Have you ever seen what this type of gun will do to someone's head? Have you ever seen what this type of gun will do to somebody's other something? And the idea is that that sort of like instills the idea of being violent to Travis. And
yeah.
I think it's an important scene, and because it does sort of kickstart the real violence aspect of the movie, I think.
Yeah, and we know he's a Vietnam vet, and when he comes back, you can tell there's something a little off with him. But
oh, yeah,
he's not violent in any way. He doesn't, like, I mean, he talks a little bit about hoping the streets get cleaned up with this filth, but you never see him act out violently or anything, really, other than his karate poses. But
yeah, I mean, he was defending himself from the threat that is Albert Brooks.
the massive force of nature.
Yeah. I think you're talking about his afro.
And yeah, so I mean, that you're right. I think that does kind of drive home this idea that violence could be an option for Travis again. Like, this is maybe how he's going to make sense of the world again.
I think it does sort of like, it gives him the idea that yes, this can be an option. You know, I feel like he always sort of thought it was probably an option in some situations, but it's like, oh, other people are doing this. Other people in suits are doing this.
You know? Yeah, true. What was the part that I brought up that we had to get back to?
The guns.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so after he kind of got this idea of violence, but, you know, introduced into his head again, he meets up with someone he met through Peter Boyle, Wizard.
I feel like it's another. Are we sure it's not another cabbie? But it's one of those.
Yeah, cabbies. So one of his cabbie friends hooks him up with this, calls him a traveling salesman, but is kind of a small time gun runner and drug dealer.
Well, he's certainly traveling. Everything's in a suitcase.
That's true. But yeah, he sells guns. Offers him plenty of other stuff. So he can get him a Cadillac and drugs and stuff. But
does he offer him a Cadillac?
Yeah, he says, I can get you a Cadillac with a pink slip for $2,000, I think.
That's funny.
Or some car. I'm pretty sure it's a Caddy. Anyway, so he, you know, they have a meeting in a hotel room. He opens up a suitcase. He's got tons of guns. He's got big, long, like...
Yeah.
He's eight-inch barrel, like, very large pistols. He's got snub-nosed ones, which would be easier for transporting and hiding. And sells him a holster. He sells him several guns. I'm not a huge gun nut, but there's a wide variety of expensive guns.
There is weaponry in the bag.
Yes, absolutely. And Travis gets to use one of these guns sooner than he kind of expects, right?
Yeah, well, he does, after that, he does his training, and or, like, there's the quote-unquote training montage, yeah. If you can call it that.
Where it's not really a montage.
It's a montage of sorts. It's not a beat, but it's him, like, in his apartment, like, working on things.
Yeah,
and stuff
I guess
like
I'm
that.
Used to just, like, some sort of synth music in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, cross-cutting, but...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not Apollo and Rocky on the beach, but it's, it's a montage of sorts.
Significantly less upbeat than that.
Yeah,
he's building his little gun sleeve device.
Yeah.
So he can store guns in his sleeve that shoot into his hands. You know, figuring out where to put the guns, where to put the holster, practicing drawing, and kind of just some tough guy posturing and stuff in front of the mirror.
And, I mean, the infamous you talking to me scene.
Yeah, this leads us to kind of the most iconic part of the movie.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, one of the biggest quotes in American cinema, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I was trying to think about all the movies and shows that spoof it, but the list is way
the
too
answer
long.
Is all of them.
It's all of the shows. Yeah. All of them.
That line Touched is like
Angel spoofs that one. Yeah.
That line's bigger than like the door closing at the end of The Godfather. Okay,
yeah.
You know, like it's huge.
Oh, it's got the line and it gives everyone a chance to do their De Niro impression, which always makes lines more fun.
Yeah.
What do you think of this scene?
I like it a lot.
In the line.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's sort of like he is posturing and he's sort of like he's working on his type of, you know, like a type of character, you know, and, and I mean, another thing I like about the scene that I never realized until reading about it recently was, it's all improvised, apparently, according to Scorsese, and you can really hear it in the sound and that it's super loud. And it was just sort of like, it was just sort of an idea they had on set. And they just sort of basically the idea is that they're in that tiny room and, I forget the name of the camera operator, but it was the camera guy, the Scorsese lying on the floor, and De Niro in front of the mirror. And in between takes, like, they were so behind budget. They were, like, five days over. And the assistant director would knock on the door in between takes, and Scorsese's like, no, just another one, just one more, and we've got good stuff going here. And, and you can sort of see it in the camera in that the framing's not always great, and a lot of times, like, De Niro pops off frame, but they sort of go back, like, just before or just after he says, "Are you talking to me?" Like, he's a little bit off frame. And I like that that part, and I like that it does sort of feel like, I don't know, sort of unrehearsed rehearsing, you know, like,
yeah,
because that's
no.
kind of what it is.
Yeah, he's hoping someone gives him the wrong look on the street, and he's kind of coming up with what his comebacks or what his macho things to say to the guy are going to be. In the script, it just says Travis talks to himself in the mirror.
Okay.
So,
the idea to talk to the mirror was there,
but the dialogue and all that kind of stuff and, you know, the posturing and the actual things that he says, those were all made up on the spot. And
I remember Scorsese saying it was all De Niro in the moment, and basically all Scorsese would ever say was, like, since it was so loud, there were so many, you know, street sounds and stuff, all Scorsese would say was, like, repeat that again, you know, like, that worked, I want to make sure we got it on the audio or something.
And I mean, good on De Niro for making one of the most classic lines in cinema.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Good for him. I know people ad-lib a lot, but that's a good one to get into the canon of cinema.
Yeah.
I was just reading some other people's take on the scene, and they said it's not so much about him wanting to seem violent, but him knowing that is his only way. It's him trying to have a conversation with someone, trying to socialize because he's so bad at socializing the rest of the time, and it just comes out as violent because he wants to have a social interaction, but he doesn't really know how to other than, you know, with kind of like a macho, tough guy, violent act, which, you know, I think makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's after this?
Well, I guess...
Oh, sorry. I want to mention one thing.
Okay, that's fine.
About that line. When asked about it later, De Niro said, did you hear this? Where he got it from?
Nope.
From... He went to a Bruce Springsteen show in the 70s, and a bunch of fans were yelling, like, Bruce at Springsteen. And Bruce was like, are you talking to me?
That's
funny. Of course, Bruce.
That's
Everyone's
really
talking
funny.
To you. You're the boss.
I just like the idea of Robert De Niro at a concert, you know? Like
a Bruce Springsteen concert.
It doesn't matter what concert, you know? Just like, if it involves him not sitting down in a corner quietly musing, you know? Like,
or directing a Bronx Tale.
Yeah. That was a musical, right?
There's a line with Peter Boyle, for sure Peter Boyle this time.
Yes.
Where he says you do a thing and that's what you are.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to him about his taxi driving career, but He says, you do a thing and that's what you are. And it seems to kind of resonate with Travis more so than, you know, Wizard or Peter Boyle wanted it to. Is this a Vietnam thing?
I don't know.
Or is this just a killer thing? Like, you know, if you're a killer, you've killed people before. That's kind of, you know, once a killer, always a killer. This is kind of who you're doomed to be. And as Travis kind of fights these urges for the first half of the movie, he kind of breaks down. And by the end of it, he's attempting to kill people and then just flat out killing multiple people.
Well, yeah, you could say, you know, it's the same thing, right? A Vietnam thing and a killer thing.
Yeah.
Because presumably he killed people in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I don't know. At what point in the movie does this come?
It's when they're standing outside that restaurant thing. It's pretty early.
Pretty early? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a take, I suppose, on that line. I just think it could sort of be, it could be that, or maybe at the beginning Travis thinks, you know, I could change that thing to a taxi driver.
Yeah.
You know, or it could just be, oh, that's already been set, you know?
Yeah.
And that I am a Vietnam vet, I am a killer or something like
that. Yeah, and he doesn't seem to, kind of has ambivalent feelings towards his job as a taxi driver.
Yes.
He seems to like it. Sometimes
he likes it for what it is, like what it allows him to not have to do. Like it gives him something to do for a long period of time, and he likes that about it.
Yeah, and he seems to be an insomniac, and so he takes the graveyard shift, so he doesn't kind of have to roll around in bed all night. He seems to be disgusted by a lot of the people he deals with and a lot of the things that he sees, and that he's forced to do as part of it. But like Iris, for example, his first meeting with Iris.
Yes, Jodie Foster's
child prostitute character.
Yeah. It's like I just sort of zoned out there for a movie. Second.
That's one thing I'm sort of split on. This relationship, they first meet, he's just kind of parked his taxi. Iris gets in and wants to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And then her pimp, Sport,
yes.
Matthew,
yes.
Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
kind of opens up the door, hits her a little bit, takes her back. Gives Travis $20 to forget about it, basically. Yeah. And then we don't see her for a little while again. And he kind of later on in the movie just makes it his mission to sort of save Iris.
Yes. Basically.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there are so many things that we're not supposed to like about Travis, but his feelings toward Iris seem to be very genuine and clean. And I don't mean feelings romantically at all.
No.
You never get an indication of that. She is a prostitute. He pays to spend time with her one time, but, you know, rejects all the physical advances. What's the deal with this kind of pure, you know, feeling, this pure part of his character?
I think the idea, I don't know, I could be totally wrong about this. I mean, I could be totally wrong about anything I say in this podcast, but yes. I think the idea behind it is sort of either Travis realizes this or he doesn't, but it's just sort of like, I can sort of stop this. Like there's still time. I think by that point, say we're going back to the conversation with Wizard where it's like, you do this thing, you are this thing.
Yeah.
Maybe Travis has figured out, I have killed, I am a killer. I need to stop this before Iris is where I'm at, you know, in 13 years. And, and I think it's that sort of thing. He just sort of wants to stop her life before it gets to a point where she is this person. So she does, or she does this thing. So she is this person.
Yeah. And she can't turn back.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe he was drafted into NOM when he was young. Maybe he sees a kid and sees, you know, these outside forces acting on her, these pretty negative things, someone kind of taking control of her and forcing her to do something that maybe she doesn't want to do. And, you know, him seeing maybe he can prevent someone getting kind of their youth stolen from them, kind of the way he may have with Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
That's what I always thought. And, I mean, he is a sexual guy. I mean, he goes to the porn theater. He kind of does the violence and the sex thing. It's kind of very basic instincts and urges that he's satisfying. But with Iris, everything seems on the up and up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's the most, I don't know, it's the most
likable thing about him.
Well, yeah, certainly. It's the least awkward somehow. You know, it's like their breakfast scene is probably the least awkward thing Travis does in the movie, even though it's a super awkward thing to think about.
It's a 12-year-old prostitute.
Yeah, exactly. A 26-year-old cab driver having breakfast.
Yeah, with mental issues. But yeah, that scene is, you know, normal.
Yeah. No. I like that scene a lot. I really like Jodie Foster in this movie.
Do you?
Yeah, quite a bit. Particularly in that scene because, I mean, like later on, when she's just sort of like the screaming damsel in distress, whatever. But in that scene, I feel like she's very adult. Like she seems very adult in that scene. But she still does like kid things. Like when she laughs, it's still very like childish laughter. And there's a couple like little silly things that she does that are very childlike, but for the most of the scene, she's very much an adult. And I like that.
Yeah.
It seems appropriate to me. It's like she is being forced to grow up, but there are still some things about her that are, you know, inherently childish. Like she just can't. She's 12, you know?
Yeah, like, and Jodie Foster really was, like, 12 or 13 at the time of the shooting, too, right? After that, I mean, do you want to talk about the holdup that he prevents?
Yeah, for sure.
So he just goes down to his corner store. He seems to be friends with the cashier. He goes into the back to get a drink or something, and then someone else comes in.
Yeah, I think he's on his cat, like on his.
Oh, is he it's working?
Sort of,
oh, okay.
Because there's definitely a cab parked right outside their front door.
Oh, I think okay. He gets in it, yeah. And then someone comes in, a black character, which I mentioned because I want to kind of get to the racial issues in this movie.
Yeah, that's right.
And he holds up the shopkeeper, and then Travis takes out one of the guns that he bought and shoots him.
Yep.
And the guy drops. He doesn't die, does he?
I don't know. I don't. It's
he looks
weird.
Pretty dead, but then when I was reading about it, everyone says he's just near dead. Or
I've always thought he's dead, and I always thought like I always. Was confused as to why the shopkeeper then proceeded to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, and he just beats him with a metal rod for a while. Travis is worried about getting caught using an unlicensed gun.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he gives the gun to the convenience store owner and just kind of goes on his way.
Yeah, I don't know why you get, like, why the convenience store owner takes the gun. You know, it seems like that would make more issues for the convenience store owner.
Yeah, I take it as kind of a thank you for saving my store and possibly life.
Fair enough.
So what's your take on this scene?
I don't know. I think it's just sort of.
Is it just kind of to ease him back into the violence thing? Because this isn't him just going out of his way and, you know, premeditated murder. This is him kind of being a good guy, you know, saving this guy's store and possibly his life.
I think you can say this action is generally good.
Mm-hmm. But it still kind of gets you down on the slippery slope a bit where. Maybe he feels comfortable killing again. Maybe he even enjoys killing
I think it's sort of like, not like an origin story type of thing, but you know how there's always sort of like that first trial in the hero's journey where they're learning their craft, like just to make sure that they can do it. And then they sort of go out and actually do it. So
yeah.
I think that it's that sort of thing.
Right on.
Yeah.
And then what else? Does anything else happen in this movie before the big... And
I think we've messed with the timeline a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like the Jodie Foster, the Iris Breakfast happens after this.
Or, yeah.
But you know, it's just, there's not a whole lot. I mean, we didn't talk about Albert Brooks and Cybill Shepherd that much, but there's just not much to say. They're just sort of there. Palantine in the cab. That's just kind of a funny scene, I think.
Yeah. And
it just sort of shows the intensity Travis has. And then Palantine being just a funny politician and saying, I learned more from taxi cab drivers.
Yeah. And so after this, we kind of get to the ending, which is kind of nonstop once it gets going.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens with Palantine?
What does happen with Palantine? Oh, Travis sort of like goes in the idea is he's going to try and kill Palantine. Yeah.
He shaves his head into a mohawk, which I guess I read that some Vietnam vets, if they got sent on a really tough mission that they didn't think they would come back from, a lot of them would shave a mohawk into their head.
Yeah, and Scorsese knew a stuntman who was in Vietnam. The stuntman ended up dying on a movie set or something, but he either knew Scorsese or worked on Taxi Driver and showed Scorsese some pictures of him in Vietnam, and all him and everybody he worked with had mohawks. So that's sort of where that idea came from. So yeah, basically you're 100% correct. And yeah, no, it's just a sort of a menacing look.
Yeah, it is. And so he gets geared up, he gets his jacket on, gets his mohawk going, stuffs his weapons all over the place, ties his...
gets his Antonio Banderas on with the desperado stuff.
Tapes a boot knife to his boot.
Yeah.
And so he approaches Palantine.
Burns some flowers. You forgot the flower.
Oh, yeah, he does. I guess that's... You want to read into that at all?
It's just pretty obvious symbolism.
Yeah, okay.
We can just keep going.
Symbology.
More like Sibology. Sibology. They were for her initially, weren't they?
They were. So he kind of approaches Palantine. There's Secret Service everywhere because he's a presidential candidate. Hmm. Reaches into his coat and Secret Service notices him before he can even get the gun out. Kind of chases him off. The Secret Service guy ends up kind of running into someone and falling down, and Travis gets away. Mm-hmm. They know he's a threat, but they don't know who he is. Yeah. And, but he seems to kind of cross the line at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
At least psychologically, yeah, that there's no turning back.
He's going to kill some people.
Yeah. And who are those people?
Well, Sport.
Yeah. He approaches Sport at his normal hangout.
Yeah.
They've talked briefly before when,
Sport thinks he's a cop.
Yeah. He doesn't recognize him because he's got the mohawk and looks a little bit different.
And it's super dark.
And it's super dark.
In the middle of the...
And he was probably high.
and he's Harvey Keitel. It just doesn't seem like the type of person that would remember a face.
And he shoots Sport in the stomach.
Yep.
And goes to the hotel where Iris has her dates.
Yeah. Yeah. And she is on a date, I suppose. And,
yep.
He
kills the... kind of bouncer guard,
yeah,
dude,
yeah,
shoots his fingers off.
Yeah, the things he does to that one hand—it's just that gunshot and then the knife through it later.
Yeah,
that hand takes a beating.
Yeah, and then he kills the person Iris is with.
Mm-hmm.
Sport's revenge. Sport comes back.
Oh yeah, Sport does come back. Yeah,
yeah, Sport comes back and gives him another run for his money in the fight. Of course, Travis ends up killing Sport, kills the John, I guess, the guy Iris is with.
That's fair.
Right in front of Iris, who is not a big fan of what she's witnessing.
Well, yeah, and, you know, she's screaming and she doesn't want him to kill the last guy, you know. I assume, like, had the option been put in front of her, do you want me to kill all of these people, she would have said no to all of them.
Yes, this is true. No. And he ends up using every weapon he has, using all the bullets of them, ends up using the knife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then
attempts to kill himself.
Yep,
before realizing that he's all out of ammo, he does get shot in the neck in the process.
Yeah, and the arm.
And the arm, yeah. So he's rough. He's in rough shape. He kind of just slumps on the couch, bleeding, and waits for the cops to show up. Mm. When the cops show up, he gives another sign of suicide and makes a gun out of his fingers and shoots himself in the head. Pretend. Yep. In front of the cop. What's your take on that? That thing, after the shooting himself, trying to shoot himself with the real gun thing, I always thought the fake gun thing was a little redundant. Is it just because there's a cop there now and he's kind of telling everyone that he's kind of over it?
I think so. I don't know. I haven't really thought, because I always forgot. There's a couple things I always forget about this movie. I always forget that he does try and kill himself. Always forget that. And it's so important.
Yeah.
But... yeah, so I always sort of thought the, like, in my head, when I go a year between seeing this movie, I always think, like, the finger to the head, like, the fake gun is sort of, like, I would kill myself, but, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
But, you know, he actually does that, so I don't know.
And
he
has a knife, I mean.
That's true.
There's ways to kill yourself without a gun.
Yeah, I feel like the, I don't know, I choose gun over knife, you know, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he gets, scene ends. I guess we should talk about the blood in that scene quickly.
Yeah, actually, the it bums me out still. Like, I feel like they fixed this for the Blu-ray, but they were going to get an NC-17 rating. So I assume it was NC-17 then or something like that, or...
I think it got down to R.
Yeah, which blows my mind. That seems crazy. they were getting a, you know, far more intense rating than they could deal with. Like, it just wasn't commercial. And they had to desaturate the blood. I think it was desaturation. I don't know. But whatever.
Yeah.
The blood looks just weird and pink. It looks like the ooze, like a sort of less vibrant ooze from Ghostbusters 2, you know, like, and it just totally, I don't know, it's weird and it messes with the color of the rest of the scene, obviously.
Yeah.
Everybody, like, it just looks so weird. And I remember the first time I saw it was in high school, and the girl I borrowed the VHS from, I was like, yeah, it's really weird. Just the gunfight scene, it's just like the tape is off, but it's just that one scene.
All of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then fixes all
of a sudden. Yeah, exactly. And she's like, oh, that's weird. Okay. And then I just sort of found out later that,
that's the way it is.
Yeah. But yeah, I think they have fixed it in the Blu-ray, but
yeah,
I know Scorsese always hated that, or I think he did at least.
Yeah. My original understanding is that the film, like the original prints were destroyed or lost. So,
They can't fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't fix it. You're totally right.
Yeah. And, so that's kind of bummed them.
Yeah.
People out for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, everybody.
And then after that, we see Travis's... He goes to the hospital. He's, he's pretty messed up.
We don't see him in the hospital.
Yeah. But we get this narration from Iris's parents. They send Travis a letter saying, thank you.
Awkward voiceover. It's so weird.
I guess we should have mentioned that one of the last things he does is before he... goes on his attempt to kill Palantine first, it sends Iris a letter and a bunch of money saying, I think you should go home and all this.
That's true.
So I guess it works. Maybe Iris is kind of so freaked out by what she sees that she wants to go home anyway. So she goes home. She gets back in school. Her parents are incredibly grateful to Travis, as they should be. Mm-hmm. And then Travis is out of the hospital later and he's back driving cabs and he picks up Betsy.
Yeah. He's sort of having a conversation with Wizard and all that stuff, and I think Doughboy and a couple of the other cabbies that we've seen before. He picks up Betsy, and it's just sort of a brief conversation. It's a normal conversation, and, it's just a normal fare, and I don't think he makes her pay
the
fare. And that's sort of how it goes, and, it's pretty basic.
Yeah, and everyone the media lauds him as a hero, and there's new front page newspaper stories about how he saved this 12-year-old prostitute and got her on the right track and all this stuff, and got shot in the process. So, everyone likes that.
Yeah.
What's your take on the ending then? Some people say it's like a dream that he died there and he kind of makes this reality for himself as he's dying that, he becomes a hero and Betsy likes him again and he goes on having a normal life.
Well, and here's the other thing I always forget about the movie. I remembered it this time, but up until this viewing, every single time I'd watched Taxi Driver, I always thought the movie ended after as they leave the building where he kills all those people and then he gets arrested. And for some reason for a decade or close to a decade, that's how I remembered the end of the movie. It's just wrong. And I feel like when that would happen, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this happens. And then sort of the desaturation and the violent scene is sort of made me think, is that a dream sequence? Like, it seems more likely to me that the murder sequence is the dream sequence. I guess, no, it doesn't. But then I would think that is a dream sequence. I think the ending happens. I think everything that happens in the movie happens in the story. I don't think any of it happens in Travis's head, really.
Okay.
And I think sort of the implication of the ending and right before we get to the end credits, it's just sort of, you see Travis, like we get switched back to this weird color scheme that's in the opening credits. And, it's very red on Travis's face and he looks in the mirror and then does like a quick double take. And this is sort of what the, it's sort of just an idea that this could happen again. He's killed people. It seems fine now, but
he's still ticking time bomb.
Basically.
Some things. There are things that can set him off. He still seems paranoid and prone to violence.
Yep.
Yeah. Just to get back to the race thing I said I wanted to touch on, how racist is Travis? Or how racist is the movie Taxi Driver?
Because
we do see black characters almost never in a positive light.
No, that's true. I don't know. I don't think Travis necessarily is racist. I think he just hates everybody.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think he necessarily hates black people more. I think he just hates everybody equally.
And some black people just happen to be pimps, and some white people happen to be pimps. And,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We never know definitively that the gentleman in the cafe at the beginning is a pimp. He's just sort of dressed like one.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And there's there's some N bombs, and I feel like the majority of the flack, or I feel like this movie would get less flack for being racist if its director wasn't dropping N-bombs, casually dropping a couple. And I feel like that is the big scene where, I don't think, I don't know. I mean, now I don't think the race of the person his wife's cheating on with gets mentioned, you know? But I mean, it just sort of makes it more hateful. And
yeah, and it,
there's a reason for it, yeah.
And it's a sign of the times. I mean, it was,
yeah, that's
segregation
totally
was fair, you know, still kind of recent in many people's heads.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's sort of, I think the movie gets seen as more racist for that scene, that the words are coming out of the director's mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess Sport was supposed to be a black character.
Okay.
But I think Scorsese actually felt that they were, in his words, stacking the deck already against black people.
Yep.
And, you know, we're already kind of, you know, thinking that maybe this movie is racist. Mm-hmm. If Sport was black, you'd have,
yes,
even more of a case, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But no, it's Harvey Keitel, a white guy who Scorsese will go on to work with again.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's some definite racism in the convenience store scene as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, not coming from Travis. Travis, I feel like, would have shot anybody in that session.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we can just focus on Scorsese for a little bit. How well does this fit in with the rest of Scorsese's filmography?
Well, I mean, I think if you're to list five important, I say, you know, if you ask film critics or fans of, like, big movie fans to name five Scorsese movies that are important to the Scorsese, you know, I think this movie makes it in that list every time.
I'd say Departed five times.
Okay.
Departed.
Yeah, I think it's one of his most Scorsesean films.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. Is it of Scorsese? It's obviously a Scorsese movie, but is it a Scorsese movie?
Yeah, like Scorsese as a tour. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely. I feel like everything that Scorsese tries to cover, like the ambiguity of what is a hero, what's not, is violence the right way.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Totally valid.
New York City.
Yes. Yeah, true. Yeah, all the main Scorsese checkpoints are there. Absolutely.
Violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, I think thematically, I feel like, I mean, if people always sort of associate him with a mob movie,
yeah,
which I don't think is necessarily true. I think it's sort of more of a, you know, a male with rage type of thing.
And right.
Two of his most famous just happen to be mob movies. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. Very important in the Scorsese canon.
Okay. AFI, the American Film Institute, not the band.
Mm-hmm.
I will make that comment every time
I mention
it.
Are we sure it wasn't Davey Havoc?
Listed Travis Bickle as number 30, I believe, on their top 100 villains. Is Travis Bickle a villain?
Ooh, spicy question, AFI.
My question.
I think the... Yeah, that's true. Sorry, I'm giving Davey Havoc too much credit all over the place. I mean, I think that's the question of the movie. And I think...
Well, he could be a villain, could be an anti-hero, he could be...
A hero. He's a hero to Iris' parents.
He's a hero to New York City by the end of it. I mean, the whole... All the newspapers seem to put him in a pretty positive light.
Yeah, well, I think... and that's, again, the idea, the Scorsese idea is that... Is he a hero? Like, is a killer ever really a hero, you know? And... it's just sort of a context thing, you know, like people kill people and it's terrible, but if people kill these people, it's fine. And, you know, let's celebrate it.
Well, yeah. And I think the best point, and I think the whole reason the Palantine thing is in there, the whole reason he tries to kill him, the whole reason that scene happens is if Travis was better at what he was trying to do, he'd be a monster.
That's
if he pulled his gun out and shot him with the Secret Service not noticing him, he wouldn't be a hero. He'd be a monster. He'd be in jail for the rest of his life. And, you know.
Yeah, that's totally true.
And he had every intention of killing this person.
Yep.
He failed. He just dropped the ball and ended up killing bad people in society's eyes,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
So I don't know if he's a villain, but I wouldn't call him a hero.
He's certainly not a hero.
Yeah.
No. I mean, that's what I think the movie is about. I mean, Scorsese's big thing is that he isn't interested in plot. He's just interested in character. But since... you know, the character's got to say something. And the idea of Travis Bickle and the ending is sort of how society looks at people that kill people. And that,
yeah,
like you said, it's basically all about who you kill.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the movie gets so much respect. And I think it's an interesting point. I mean, it's been done so much since, you know, I mean, I'm sure it had been done before.
Yeah.
But this is just sort of a major American film. Well, you know, major now, that has just sort of stayed in the cultural consciousness. And
yeah.
And only because of an extremely memorable line, but yeah, it's still a good movie.
You know? And I mean, if we look at it in the Vietnam light again,
yeah, that's
you know, it's like, if you killed these people, and it's funny because Vietnam was such a contentious war that this was kind of an example of American soldiers killing the bad guy, but not coming out the right way to the American public,
mm-hmm.
like them not being seen, viewed as heroes when they came back by okay. a majority of the population, right? Yep.
Well, you were saying you don't particularly care for this movie, right?
Yeah, it's one of those movies that I see why it's in film classes, and I mm-hmm. see, you know, it's just one of those movies that I have much more, not fun, because fun's not the right way to talk about Taxi Driver. I find a lot more interesting to look at and talk about than to watch. Like, okay. I don't know if I'll ever need to see this movie again, and I'm mm-hmm. sure I will, because someone will want to see it, but I don't know.
I can't imagine... you know, myself watching this movie again for another few years at least. I mean,
I don't need to. I was not enjoying watching it. Mm-hmm. I paid 100% attention to it and tried to pick things out to talk about. But I don't like sitting through this movie. And it's not because it's terribly awkward. I'm fine with that. I do like a lot of the kind of descent into madness movies and stories. But this movie does not do much for me to watch again and again.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you said that last night when we were talking about this briefly. And... yeah, and I mean, I totally see your point. And there are parts of this movie that I just don't want to watch when I watch the movie again. And I mean, I don't particularly want to watch the movie again now. I enjoy the movie, but it's like you said, it's very much sort of an interesting type movie more yeah. than it is good to us. And it just sort of, it made me think that, you know, like kids that are five now, you know, like how are they going to watch, you know, movies by directors that we found really interesting growing up, you know, like how is David Fincher's catalog going to look to, to, you know, someone who's five now and who will be, you know, our age in 20 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I thought that was really interesting. And it's sort of like, I was trying to figure out who our directors that are Scorsesean are. And, you know, it's just, I just sort of always came back to, you know, I mentioned Wes Anderson earlier, but I mean, the film landscape has changed as well too. Like they've, both of the directors I've mentioned, other than Scorsese, have sort of dabbled back and forth in independent and, you know, more Hollywood movies. And,
yeah.
And you know, I just thought it was an interesting point that the movies that we love for certain reasons will one day sort of be what Taxi Driver is to us. You know, like, I mean, Nolan, it will sort of, I think, be seen as our Spielberg type thing. Like, there will be people talking about... Inception, like we talked about Jaws in yeah. our podcast a few months ago. And I don't know, it's just a really interesting like circle of film type of thing. And
yeah,
and I mean, I again, you and I both feel that some of Scorsese's later films have been more highly revered or more revered than they should be. And it is all a reputation thing. And I think it's totally possible, if not like highly likely, that 30 years from now you and I will like a Christopher Nolan movie way too much.
Yeah,
you know,
but I find Taxi Driver people still like. I feel like I'm on the outside, and not because I want to be, but Taxi Driver posters still are every like at poster well, sales at universities and stuff.
That's a kid.
It's because Travis is so cool.
It's an iconic thing.
Yeah,
it's an icon. And you know, Tyler Durden will be cool in 20 years, regardless if Fight Club is still, you know,
yeah.
And it's just sort of an iconic character with an iconic line with iconic moments in this movie.
An iconic haircut.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, no, and, there's just tons of things like that you yeah. can pick out very quickly.
Specifically yeah. Travis Bickle. Yeah. And, it's just, and the movie, the way the movie has been talked about, this is always one of those, it's one of those movies that people are often afraid to say they don't like. I
yeah.
think that's part of it as well. And yeah, I think it's just a lot of factors. I do think it's a good movie, you know. It's not in my 20 favorites, but you know, I think it's a good movie. I think it's an interesting movie, and I think stylistically it's very cool sometimes. But you know, I wouldn't say I love this movie.
Okay.
So yeah. That was basically what I was thinking about last night after you were watching and we were talking about the movie a little bit.
But do you love Activities?
I love Activities.
Wow.
Activities are the rock of podcasting activities, I think. Or, sorry, you know, ideas.
All right, it's another lightning round.
Yes!
That was fun last time.
Is there a Gatorade in the fridge? I'm gonna need...
Yeah, but I poured a Red Bull in it.
No! Yes!
Okay, you ready for lightning round?
Yes.
Leave a little silence for you to put the lightning sound effect in.
In post. We didn't do that last time. I'm probably not going to do it this time.
Send it to the guys in post. Yeah. Send my note that I want a lightning
sound. Okay, yeah, I'll send it. I'll send that note to this guy. Anyways, lightning round. I'm too excited. Stop.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Should Scorsese...
You're ruining the integrity of lightning round.
Sterling
this
reputation.
This is the slowest paced lightning round ever.
Okay, that lightning round's over. New one. That was the lightningest of lightning rounds. Oh, you didn't even get an answer.
Intense.
Okay, should Scorsese be in more of his movies?
No.
If it were made today, would Leonardo DiCaprio be the star?
Yes.
Would he have a shitty accent?
Yes.
How hot is Cybill Shepherd in this movie? Out of 10.
6.5.
How hot is her career right now? Out of 10.
Well, the TV movie.
Lightning!
Okay. The TV movie about Martha Stewart was irrelevant. Zero.
Okay. Would you rather clean common blood off the backseat of a taxi or make it with Harvey Keitel for 8 minutes?
Harvey Keitel.
Okay. Is this better than Goodfellas?
Yes.
Is it better than Casino?
Yes.
Is it better than Casino and Goodfellas combined?
Does that mean watching them both back to back?
Yes.
Then yes. Taxi Driver's better.
Okay. Is it better than Popeye's Chicken?
No.
Is it more?
Wait. It makes me feel just as disgusting as Popeye's Chicken, okay. So it's a wash.
8 words why this movie is so cool.
Does count?
One. Two, three, four.
Travis Bickle is an iconic character. Yes, please.
That's it.
Lightning.
Lightning round. We should just wrap up with, I'm sure you're going to roll your eyes at this, the talk of a sequel to Taxi Driver.
Yeah, sure.
It's mentioned a few times. Yeah. Robert De Niro talked about it on his Inside the Actors Studio.
Okay.
Scorsese has discussed it as well, doing kind of like a Travis Bickle, where is he now kind of thing. Yeah. How do you feel about this idea?
Sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah, they've talked about this recently, haven't they?
Yeah, I saw stuff from 2000, 2005, and then something.
Yeah, I've seen like something later than that. Recently. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I totally forgot about that. That is a terrible idea, guys.
Why?
Because Travis Bickle's dead. I think Travis Bickle has found a way to die.
However he lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. He's dead in prison, or he's just dead, you know, it's like. Got really into heroin or something, you know.
So you just want Scorsese to extend the Departed series and then do a Gangs of New York 2 instead?
Sure.
And then Shutter Island?
Yeah. I thought Shutter Island was all right.
Shutter Island 3D?
Sure. I'm interested to see Hugo, actually.
Yeah.
I think that looks interesting.
And he's not slapdashing it either.
No. I probably won't even see it in 3D. I'll just go see it. But trailer looks interesting. Anyways.
Well, that's our Taxi Driver podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. And check back next week.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. This episode has been brought to you by Eugene Levy's Eyebrows, the only depository that could possibly hold all that cash from the roles he just can't turn down. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.